But Mr. Ellis, the policy that I'm speaking of, if that wouldn't, what would? Listen, that policy must also embrace and encompass that's a watermark situation too, like the situation we had at Crane, the other ones that would emerge. There's a policy that I'm speaking about is an expansive policy that will stop all of this foolishness. I've been hearing about this now for eons. The policy needs to be rigid and applied. It has to stop. That's all I'm trying to say. They got to do something about it, man.
Okay.
Good, there's one. The shop that you were speaking about coming from Ms. Ram, you know we have a lot of shops where Landmark, I would refer to so-and-so shop. That's Ronnie Cox Corner there. Ronnie Cox Shop at the corner. I don't know if you're familiar with that name. A gentleman used to run that business back then, Ronnie Cox. The corner from Ms. Ram, you would come right across onto Rock Hall there.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Yeah.
Right. And there are hosts of those shops that you would highlight as by so-and-so Paint Donkey, King James Corner. There are hosts of them. That's the same with your equipment, Mr. Mayor's probably tomorrow morning. Yeah, let me see where am I now. A bit of nostalgia came in when you spoke about the election with Mr. Bernard St. John and Anderson Peanut Morrison. That was nostalgic when I started to reflect on it back then. And I mean,
you obviously participated in that campaign. Did you?
Not in a major way, but I would have been young. Mm. And yes, to some extent, I would have been following, because I've been following parties from my 60s. So, yes. And I've got so much of information regarding the amount of things that would have occurred. I remember a time Mr. Seeley was at the Governor General Gate, and none can go in and none can come out. Mr. Adams was there. There was a protest, this, and he was signing him, don't know, and give him some early ambulance come, because obviously if you don't feel well, you got to call the ambulance, none can come in or go. I remember, I can say some things that, but that's another political stuff. We will have to have a day for saying like that. But I go way back and come forward.
Okay.
I remember the Mr. Seedman sitting in speaker chair too.
Yeah, we do recall that. And took up the mace.
I remember Slim's going to America on the plane when they realized he was in America. Anyhow, look, let me go on to what you want to say. What question to you now? That lady that spoke earlier in the program as regarding all these situations in the cry about the height and water business, etc., she touched it.
Somehow you got lost there. In the meantime, let me share this with you. This person, I didn't hear you. I thought you were lost for a period.
Oh, well, something wrong with your system because somebody's complaining about the site.
Mm-hmm, possibly so. All right, thank you very much.
Hello?
This person says, has it ever occurred to you, meaning me, that you are too pro-business? The truth is that we keep criticizing the public servants. But what have you heard from the private sector leaders other than they are working with the government? What new projects or ventures they will be bringing on stream? Is the private sector really productive at the managerial level? We need to seriously balance this debate if we want the ordinary citizen to be less cynical. It is an important discussion to have, because where we are going right now is supposed to take us in a direction where there is less government and more private sector. And part of what I believe obtains here in Barbados is that in those areas where people have no objection to the private sector, the businesses tend to be owned by foreigners and by white agents. And that there are a lot of black people in Barbados who have a problem with black people being involved in business. And they are prepared to encourage other people to own, but to cry down and to destroy black Barbadians once they start to get involved in business. We have to check ourselves. And yes, you may be right. I may be more pro-business, but I think there has to be a balance struck. I don't believe that everything can be surrendered to business. And if you're going to give more to the business community, then your regulation is still required. But there's too much of an emphasis on government. And that emphasis is not created by the business people alone. It is created by politicians who over the years wanted to hold on to as much power as possible so they can determine who will get and who will not, and pay lip service to the whole concept, and then get up and criticize the business community, saying, oh, it is not strong enough. It is not flexible enough. You know, it relies too heavily on government. And their whole procurement approach is to perpetuate a situation where somebody can come and beg them for a contract because politicians have felt empowered by that. So let's be realistic. There's no one side to be blamed for this, but recognize that if we are to get out of this particular crisis right now, part of what we have to do is to privatize. And the other part of it is that if you're giving workers a stake, and I agree 100% with the idea of giving workers a stake in it, rather than just hiving it off to the biggest business that you can find and create these vertical structures and that vertical integration and that sort of thing, you still have to give, you got to help them not only with money, but you got to help them with technical support. And we need to hear a little bit more about that aspect of it, you know. So I agree with you. Let's have the debate, because I have been around long enough to hear the trade union movement in this country has spearheaded it, and it has been ably assisted by some of the politicians in this country who, rather than find ways of encouraging people to own business, have been attacking them at the slightest, at the drop of a hat, because it is politically expedient to do that, them and their supporters. That's my view. I am not the only person with a view, though. Please call me. Tell me what you think. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Harris.
Yes.
Hello.
You're on the air.
I'm not hearing so well, sir.
You are on the air.
I'm on the air.
Yes.
Okay. Listening to you, Mr. Ellison, I think you raised some very important points as far as the beach, Brighton, Bass Rock. And the question I'd like to ask, I don't know if you remember that there was some time a development was supposed to have been built at Bass Rock, which would have entailed a new road being built.
A new road has been built. They have built the new road, and there's also been a significant improvement on the side closer to the water, where they have put a walkway, and they've put plants and that sort of thing inside there, which, that was a good job. That was a good job. I think it was a requirement to accommodate the new business, which has not yet started. And that was supposed to start, my recollection is that was talked about as far back as 2007. But then the financial crisis came, and I don't know to what extent it impacted on it.
Have you looked at the area up above the now, between the flour mill and the Brighton's beach? You realize there have been some trees that have been planted there some time back. But now you find that there's a whole set of, red cases or whatever it may be, a whole set of things. My position is that, and I think you're well aware of it, that somewhere along the line that the NCC, either that they've got too much to look after, or some beaches are not as important as others in terms of beautifying and maintaining. And for example, when you look at the area I've just spoken about, I think you would drive past there, you'll see for yourself what I'm talking about. It seems to be neglected in many forms. When you look at the stretch between the St. Brandon and the Hot Pot, completely overrun as far as they're concerned, as far as other people are concerned, by beech shrubs. And somewhere along the line, at one time, that was a beautiful stretch where people would jog from the Flower Mill angle all the way down to the hot pot of Voice of the World. There had been a complete neglect of that area. And I don't think David Ellis can do it or I can do it. I think it's the responsibility of the NCC to maintain and beautify that area as far as the Brandon Brighton is concerned. And I'm asking you to take a look and see what I'm talking about. It's overgrown. The whole set of bushes going right down to the water. You can't walk the beach comfortable. There's nowhere. And I think this can be seen. Now, the other thing, Mr. Ellis, that I am peeved about this morning, there's cricket at Kensington now. There's the Sir Garfield Sobers statue, which all of us know has been removed and has been placed just outside of the Mecca of cricket in the region, Kensington Oval. But whenever there is something at Kensington Oval, some commercial venture seems to occupy the space that they shouldn't be, should not be allowed to occupy. This morning, if you drive past there, you're going to see a commercial venture. I'm not going to name it because I think that people would have seen it. A commercial venture in terms of one of the service providers as far as phones are concerned, right in front of the statue. And I don't think this is nice. I don't think that's becoming. I think they've got other areas around Kensington. Or if Garfield Sobers' statue is supposed to be at a prominent place.
How does it defile the statue in your view?
It detracts in the sense that, one, the color is attractive and it hides the statue in the sense the color, if you're dealing with red, obvious red is a color that you can't miss. It is right in front of the area where people would most likely want to take photographs of the statue or view the statue on their way to Kensington. And I think there are other areas at Kensington Oval for that kiosk. I like to say these things to you because I want you to see these things for yourself and then say, well, he's right or he's wrong. The fact of the matter was about short just now, and now we're talking about Brandon, we're talking about Brighton, and I'm asking you to take a look now that cricket is being played.
I have seen various promotions around the statue, and it didn't strike me as undermining the statue in any significant way. But that's my view. I suppose it may depend upon the particular promotion, though. I mean, there may be one that would occur one day, and I would say, well, that one stands out to my mind as not being as appropriate. But, I mean, I can understand why promoters would want to work with the statue in that way, because it is imposing enough, it arrests your attention. And to that extent, if the statue is going to be used as a means of trying to get the Kensington Oval Management Company additional revenue, you know they're going to work with it. I think that's really what it's about.
I agree with you, but Mr. Ellis, sometime back there was a cray, that area was used for the same promotion of vehicles, motor cars, and everything were parked, and they were actually parked. Creating a blockage as far as the statue is concerned.
Well, that's a different matter.
Now, this morning, and having passed there over and over, and I know exactly the area well, I believe that kiosk could have gone in gone at least another 20 or 30 feet away from the statue. I think that it's placed there. It's a strategic position, yes. Obviously, statue is strategic there, but I don't think it is fair to Sir Garfield. I don't think it is fair to the cause of that statue in terms of visibility.
Okay, but that's your point of view. Thank you very much for sharing it. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. Let's welcome our next caller. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, welcome.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I'm just trying to make a complaint here about this area in St. George, Charo Bridge area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's two main roads there. One coming from St. George Parish Church, and one coming from down by Robert's Factory. You know that?
Yeah, I know the junction there by Shafet.
Right. And the other, and the one coming from
Ruins.
Right, that's supposed to be a straight.
That's the same kind of problem that they face up there in St. Philip. That's exactly the same kind of challenge you face. When you get there, you don't know who's got the right of way, and the markings are not clear enough.
Right. But my complaint is the traffic that's coming from down by Roberts do not stop at the Mayor's Road
I could tell you, it's the same problem. But I think there's a need for more signage. That's the first order of business, and that we need to have better markings at these major stops. Because if you don't do that, you run the risk also of creating accidents.
Right. You only let me stop there when the police there. That lady used to be there every morning, every evening. She booked this hotel up. People must stop.
Right.
And now, no policing at all. I was trying to get through to the gentleman that was bringing me traffic in the morning, but I can't get through to him. But I hope he hear to say no. You know, he's dancing too?
Yes.
Right. I hope he hearing to say no, because that something won't do in there. Somebody can get killed at that junction.
All right, well, I hope that they do something to avoid that as quickly as possible. Down to brass tacks. It's 9 minutes after 1 o'clock.
And blessed day to you, Mr. Ellis.
And to you, too. Have a wonderful weekend. I hope you will.
And I trust that you will as well, you and your staff at the station and so on. Mr. Ellis, I want to agree with things I heard you said, namely, as far as the state assets are concerned, with having Barbadians participate in when they have to do any privatization of these entities. I want to hold it because, and this is something that I had mentioned already, and I wholeheartedly support that, because I think if we want to think in terms of helping to cause the masses to share and what they are, what we would call the economic pie or development of our country, the wealth accumulation, I think this is the way to go about it. Especially now we're going to be, which will have to be done, where the government is going to be looking at paying out people monies with the IMF program that is coming in place. I think if they are going to do that, this is something that they should look at. And in even inviting the credit unions to participate, because you know quite a number of people in Barbados are credit union members, and I think that this is a direction that government should push, and I am certain that the country will give them the support with that idea. Now, I want to go on to something. You want me to comment on that?
No, sir.
You agree with what I just said as well?
Well, I don't need to comment. You've expressed your view.
Right. I heard Ms. Motley was giving the Prime Minister in Grenada. I think she was speaking at some forum in Grenada, where she said that she thinks the time has come for the way judges are being appointed by Prime Ministers to be looked at. And then she went on to say that the CCJ, the judges are appointed, the way they have been appointed seems to be working. Did you hear?
I didn't hear that portion of it. I did join the discussion a little late. So mm-hmm. I was more into the question and answer session.
Right.
Because I was keen to find out what was being said there by the... by the people in Grenada. What are your thoughts on what she said?
Now, my concern about that aspect of it is this. I don't think you cannot align or compare the Caribbean Court of Appeal selection of judges to an individual country, like how Barbados Prime Minister would appoint a judge. They're completely different.
Well, how far back do you go on this issue? Because there are people who would take you back to 1974 and the constitutional amendment which was made back then. And you may recall that there was a lot of criticism of that particular change when Mr. Barrow was Prime Minister. And at that time they were called puisne judges, P-U-I-S-N-E. And are you there? Sounds as though you dropped out. Anyhow, back then, the concern was that the Prime Minister was taking unto himself the power to appoint judges, and people saw that as having more of a direct political slant. So that was the criticism that was made. I have lived to see us go through many a period where people have questioned that particular approach. And there has been this view by some that judges should be appointed by a Judicial and Legal Services Commission. So the setup with the CCJ is that prime ministers do not get involved in appointing or determining who is going to serve on the CCJ. And there's a special body drawn from people around the region. And I think if you watch the presentation from Grenada, you would have seen Dr. Francis Alexis. He is one of the people sitting on that body.
Now, Mr. Ellis, the reason why I said I'm concerned about that is that there are two different comparisons. Mm-hmm. You have the CCJ that is catering to the region, making decisions throughout the region.
Yes.
Whereas an individual country judge, selection of a judge is for the individual country.
Agreed. So why does it have to be within the hands of a prime minister?
I'm saying that if she's talking about making a change to only the prime minister in a particular country making a decision for a judge, well, I can see that what she is saying, but I'm of the view that she was making mention of that a selection of a judge in a country, that the region should be given the opportunity to participate in that decision for a particular country.
Well, you interpreted, okay. So your interpretation is that she's talking about having a regional selection process.
Yeah, that is how I could be wrong, but that is how I understand.
A regional selection process for judges across the region. But there would have to be so much of it.
I don't know. Because, you see, this here could be a very... Because I'll tell you this. My view is, you have eminent and prestigious judges in Barbados, the people of great reputation and so on. Mm-hmm. Then you would go outside the region to bring a judge to sit on the bench here when you have well-qualified persons.
Okay, let me ask you something.
That's why I'm
you guys
got
to be... Okay, but you got to look at the situation from different angles. What about the Barbadians who have left this country and have served in other Caribbean countries on the bench? In the OECS right now, I know of one Barbadian who is sitting and has been sitting on that OECS bench for quite some years. If you look at the Turks and the situation where he was a magistrate here, but went and served in Bermuda as a judge. We have had others. One has served in Belize and the Bahamas. So you need to look at it from that angle. But there's another matter that we have to confront. For years, we have been saying that sometimes the best people who are available in the individual jurisdiction, those people do not want to become judges. It does not pay them well enough because they can make far more money at the private bar than going on the bench.
But so, that's a different situation.
But it narrows the pool of people available in any jurisdiction in the small countries. And Barbados has that problem.
Yeah, but you're talking about something different because if you have that kind of a situation, then you've got to then do otherwise.
But do you realize that we are perceived as having that problem right now?
Well, you're going about this perception again.
Look, I'm telling you. Let me say something to you. Look, because walk with me through this. There was a time when our judges were coming largely from the public sector. You remember that? The person who sit as director of public prosecutions seemed to have an automatic movement to the bench and that sort of thing. People came from, you know, other parts of the public service. Then we said, you know, this isn't good enough because the pool is too limited there. So let us have a combination of people from the public sector and the private bar. But even then, you continue to have a situation where the people that were considered most eminently qualified to sit on the bench said, look, you know, that's not something that I want to do. So it narrows your pool. And if your pool is narrowed, then you should be allowed to go outside of Barbados to look for the best possible brains.
Only if.
But I am asserting to you that if is a reality now.
Now, let me go on to something else before you finish off here. You remember I said to you, I'm going to speak, and this is concerning the Integrity Commission forum that we had the other in the Senate, the discussion that the Mr. David...
But before you go on, somebody who heard that section says to me that she never went in the direction that you are suggesting. She said that the prime ministers shouldn't select judges, but judges should apply for the post and be considered by a panel, just as happens with the CCJ.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
See, that's why...
You missed the point.
Right, that's why I said to you, she said, and I was wanted to be sure, because then I was not exactly sure as to what of all she had said, really. That's why
whether the panel is a local panel or a regional panel, let's say it's a local panel, that panel is still going to be faced with this issue that we are confronted with right now, you know.
Yeah, but let me ask you.
And one more point. Be careful that the notion of narrow nationalism does not put you in a position where you will settle for less than the best.
I use your word again. The perceived best.
Well, at the end of the day, it is the lawyers themselves and it is the other judges, especially the judges in the higher courts, who will determine how good a judge is,
Let me go on to make the point I want to make to you. Now, you remember I was speaking to you, I think it was last week or so, and I did mention to you, I said to you, there was no mention of how long this financial document should be kept in under lock and key when it will be returned.
Which document were you talking about? I know we spoke about a document, but can't remember which one.
The Integrity Commission, the parliamentarians' financial document should be given and put under lock and key and so on. Remember that?
Yes.
Right, good. Yeah. Now, and you asked me the reason why, but I was heartened to hear, I think Mr. Rob, that was him, who spoke to the commission, and he asked the same questions. Because, you see, he was asking, how long should this information be kept, and when should it be returned? And he was asking the same thing, because, as I was saying, and he is of the same view, if you are submitting, he said, this is private, personal information that are given of a person's financial position. Then, why should that have to be kept and left there after you've left the problem? That's why he asked the question, at what point? How many years? 2 years? 3 years? Why? Because, you see, I'm saying to you, my point is, when you have this kind of information that you're giving out, and that has to be left there for any, and we don't know how many people have the key for these documents that are under lock and key. How many people have access to the same, whether it be a safe or whatever. And you know, even in police stations, evidence disappear and nobody don't know how it gets disappeared.
You know, we are also talking about data protection.
But there you are. But you see, so he said, you know, so that if it can be destroyed, at what point, the one that you have on the computer and so on. And he was asking this, and I think, for me, that's just very important for people to know.
Do you think that that there is a need for legislation relating to integrity in public life?
Yes, I think so. Yes, I believe so. We want to look
at bettering our situation as we go along and improving it the way we see, although we still, there's some things that I have as far as appreciation, gifts and so on, is looked at, how people want to just destroy the spirit of benevolence as far as I am concerned, because you know...
You mean that discussion that you had with me last week on Monday?
You
had it wrong, though.
Do you know if you invite somebody for a drink now or a lunch, that can be seen as a bribe?
But that's why they don't invite... That's why they're inviting you nowhere. I don't want nobody to say that I bribe you.
That's what I'm saying to you. We've got to be very careful how we are seeking to destroy the spirit of...
No. But you need to be careful. All right. You know, we went through that already. None of your friends communicated with you after that exchange?
No, not after.
They haven't spoken to you about it?
No, I spoke to them, some of them. I go swimming something even, and them and I had a discussion on it. Before?
Before,
this was before even discussed with you, Carl.
You were reflecting their views on it?
Why?
They felt the same way?
Yes, and I spoke to them about it. They didn't agree with me.
Because when you finish, you make it seem as though there's no such thing as a bribe. There's only a bribe. You told me it is only a bribe if you are resistant and the person is insistent that you should take it.
but
that's your definition. Let's not go back over that.
But how else can you describe a bribe?
No, come on.
There's no other way.
It's an amazing thing. You got it in a way that many people would not accept.
You see, you come with a perception again. There's no other way you can accept it.
No, we got to go with the courts. What the law says. You got to go with what the law says a bribe is, all right?
Here it is. Every law is lawful, but not helpful.
All right, well.
Remember that.
You will find some escape valve. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Looks as though this is the last caller. Come. Last caller for today. Yes, welcome.
Yeah, good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon.
I got a light bill here for $431.
What's for a month?
Yes.
So you called the light and power?
I called the loan and power. They said there wasn't no reading last month. And there was.
So this is an estimate?
This is an estimate bill. I accustomed paying $251. It never meant $300. They said it's an estimate bill. I just can't get it. Understand? This is double. For a month. And I can't get this understand. I really can't get it understand.
Look, what I want
this
you to do...
This is your charge going up.
No. Stop. You can't argue this case in public, you know. You got to go to like the power and sort this out with them. I mean...
I call already and they give me this monkey talk and two, four, this charge and this...
You perhaps need to go there, the fuel charge. The fuel charge. Do you need to perhaps put on your clothes on Monday and go to the Barbados Light and Power Company where you can speak face-to-face with them about what you see as the discrepancy? Because that's what you are saying. You believe there's a discrepancy on this bill. But trying to just leave it there on the telephone may not be good enough. So that's what I would suggest that you do. Thank you all very much for participating in today's edition of the program. This has been Down to Brass Tacks for Friday, the 31st day of August. I'm David Ellis, and thanks to my producer and technical operator, Dennis Johnson. Do have a great afternoon and an excellent weekend.